Okay. So I was asked to speak about issues of Kibud Avim, right? So I wanted to use a Gemara that speaks about something that I thought was very interesting and focus on a Machshava issue and maybe two contemporary halachic issues. So the Gemara in Kedushin Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Aleph speaks about the following. You're familiar with the sugya? Oh, you have a Gemara. Okay. The Gemara says, Tani Avima Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Aleph Amud Aleph. Do you do this Gemara yet?
Yeah.
So Tani Avimai Bered Ravivu Yesh Machila Avid Pisioni Retar Domin Olam V'Yesh Maftichu Brichim. Anyway, so I'm doing this Gemara on Bottom of Daf Lamed Aleph Omed Aleph, and that is Tani Avimai Bered Ravivu Yesh Machila Avid Pisioni Retar Domin Olam V'Yesh Maftichu Brichim U'Mevihu L'Chayim Olam Abba. So the review says that there are people who give their father like pheasant to eat and things of that nature, and nevertheless they go to Gehenna, and there are people who make their father grind the wheat and they go to Olam Haba. And then he goes on and he says, Amaravu, Gagona Vimai Berei, like for example, Avimai, my son, Kiye mitzvahs kibud, he accepted, he fulfilled the mitzvah of kibud avim in the most pristine way. Chamisha banai samchi havile lavimai, he had five children who were, you know, astute, had smicha or established personalities. V'chaye aviv v'chi havi asa rebi avu karele abba rahit v'azo patachle. Va'amar in Adamasi Hasam. What would he do? He would, you know, when his father was knocking at the door, and he's speaking about himself, you know, when I would knock at the door, my son Avimai, even though he had five children, he could have said to them, oh, go get the door for grandpa. He ran, and throughout it, he was saying, yes, yes, I'm coming, so that his father would realize that no one was waiting for him. And Adamasi Hasam, you know, until he would get there. And then Yomachad Amrale Ashken Maya, one day there was a time in which he asked them for water. Adi Asile Nimnan Gachon Kai Alai Ad Disyair. And what happened was he's speaking about himself. I asked my son for water. And what happened was, my son went to get me water, by the time he came back, I was sleeping, and what did he do? He didn't put the cup down there and just leave it. He actually just waited until I woke up, and then he gave me the water. And therefore, Siate Milse V'Darish Avimai Mizma La'asaf. And therefore, Avimai was able to be Doresh, the Perek of Tehillim of Mizmor La'asaf. So first, from a Machshava perspective, I just wanted to just make some comments about this piece of Gemara. First of all, this idea, and it's highlighted in other places within rabbinic literature, within halacha, or within midrashim also, but the idea that sometimes the mitzvah of kibud avim, it's not just the action itself, but rather it's the internal mindset. Rabbi Soloveitchik actually has an interesting article. Have you ever read Family Redeem? So you should. Have you ever read it, Family Redeem? Yeah. So in Family Redeem, he has a piece in Kibud Avim, and he speaks about the idea that sometimes Kibud Avim, it's not about just the action itself, but really the internal aspects, and that's exactly what this Gemara is telling us regarding. You know, there's one person who can give pheasant to eat, you know, fancy duck, and goes to Gehenna, and there's one person who has his father grill the wheat and goes to Olam Haba, because it's the mindset. And in other texts, you actually see in a more elaboration. For example, in some of the Midrashim and in the Yerushalmi, the conversation actually is more elaborated upon than it is here. Are you familiar with that, with the Yerushalmi? Rashi quotes the Yerushalmi, and that is that The idea is that he told him, you know, what do you care where the money comes from? Go chew, chew, go eat, eat. And that's, so it's the mindset. It's not just about how much money you spend. And the case of the grinding the wheat was a story about a person who was asked to, in the case of the grinding of the wheat, it was a situation in which he was grinding the wheat for his father, and then the king called the father to go do work in the palace, and the son said, you know, Abba, why don't you grind the wheat? It's a limited, you know, exercise. I'll go do the work in the palace, which might be unlimited in amount of heavy labor. So in other words, the idea is it's not just the action itself, but it's also the internal mindset. And that's the same thing that's actually seen with, you know, the knocking at the door. The father's knocking at the door. He can delegate this appropriately so he can delegate this to his children, because then his children would fulfill the mitzvah of not only kibud of aim of honoring the father who said, please get the door for your grandfather, but also honoring the grandfather by opening the door. The fact that he was saying, yes, yes, I'm coming, it also showed that all of his activity of going to the door was just done, you know, for a kibud of the aim possibility. And the same thing is also true regarding the idea of with the water, the fact that he was willing to wait by his father and just wait there also shows his mindset that it wasn't about anything else but really to show respect to his father. We have other stories about people not waking their fathers, like the famous story, you know, about the Chacham Mukam, and they want the stones for the Choshen, right? Right? And, but there actually, the not waking is actually something where there's a slight difference. There, him, the son not doing anything is actually, it creates almost, you know, a change in their affluence. And here, actually, just standing there is only being done to show respect to the father. It's actually, in some ways, obviously not waking the father for the key is, you know, much more, it's a much more stronger form of kibud of the aim, because you're willing to compromise the finances. On another level, actually, this, which has no dramatic or no benefits whatsoever, the only thing that it has is the fact that its purpose is to transform, is just to show respect to the father, just to mamash, just wait there, is showing a certain internal commitment to keep it up aim. And I think all of these stories are trying to show internal commitment to keep it up aim. The question then becomes, what exactly is happening? And then it says, what was his schar? It says, V'darish Avimai Mizmor La'asaf. Avimai was able to understand the Perek of Tehillim, Perek Ayin Tes, of Mizmor La'asaf. So the question is, just wanted to ask, and that is, you know, what exactly is this Perek of, what's so unique about this Perek of Tehillim, you know, that he was able to do it? That he would say, what's the connection? So Rashi, right, what does Rashi say about it? You guys learned this Gemara? What does Rashi say about it?
It shouldn't have been Mizmor La'asaf. It should have been Kino La'asaf.
Right. And?
And he was starting to understand that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he uses up all his anger on the Beis HaMikdash, so it's a Mizmor La'asaf that instead of hurting people, he hurt the bricks.
Right. So in some ways, it has nothing to do with the act itself. It's a reward for the act of Kibud Av Aim, right? And how does Tosfos learn this? Tosfos also has a piece on this.
The Moshe was the Sifcha who lost her Caleb in the clay chaz in the well, and then the Bas Melech came and lost her clay zav in the well. So someone went to get that one, so she was happy that they went to get the clay zav because they'll get her Caleb also. So to Bnei Korach, happy when the Beis Mikdash went down, because it so says when a Kozbach goes to bring back the Beis Mikdash, they'll bring back
slightly different, that since the Perek in Tehillim basically says that basically the Sharei of Eretz Yisrael or of the Beis Mikdash will be rebuilt even though they were swallowed up, so basically you know, Asaf is basically acknowledging the fact that this recognizes the fact that maybe my lineage won't totally be forgotten, but there can actually be some type of reconciliation, renewal, re-engagement. And we see another, whether Midrashim or other comments from Chazal, that actually some of the B'nai Korach were Ba'i Tshuva, and speaks about the idea that they learned in B'nai Brak and other things of that nature. In other words, that just because something happens that's so catastrophic, it doesn't mean there can't be a renewal. Mizmor L'Asaf, this is Asaf, who is the descendant of Korach, is celebrating the fact that what he saw with the Churban Bayis can also help him deal with his family issues. So in some ways, that's a little bit more connected to the Kibbutz Ovaim paradigm, because Asaf is doing like Kibbutz Ovaim by recognizing, Asaf in this parak of Tehillim is doing that, but it doesn't really show anything about Avimai's Kibbutz Ovaim or anything else of that nature. So I was looking at this parak of Tehillim, and just, you guys, can you think of anything else that this actually, how this can be connected to really the story itself? In other words, the explanations of Rashi and Tosfos are external to the story. You could have, you know, saved a person crossing the street, and you deserve to be able to answer this question, answer Mizmor L'Asaf, right? There doesn't seem to be anything about the about this parak of Tehillim that's related to the story of someone sleeping and just waiting for the father who was sleeping.
Maybe it's us waiting for Geula.
Us waiting for Geula. Okay, more than that. Could be, yes, I think that's part of it. If you look, are you familiar with this parak of Tehillim? So what is the parak of Tehillim basically acknowledging? The parak of Tehillim saying that Geula doesn't just help Klal Yisrael, it also helps the Kadosh Baruch Hu. It's like the Avinu Malkeinu, Asei L'man Shemecha, you know, or at the times where Moshe Rabbeinu goes to a Kadosh Baruch Hu and says, forgive the Jewish people, because people are going to look at you, God, and say you didn't have the capacity to bring them into Eretz Yisrael, right? So that's the same thing here. You know, Ezreinu Elokei Yishenu Adivar Kod Shemecha Vatzilenu Chaper Asei L'man Shemecha Lamru Yom Ragayim Ayei Elokeichem. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we want you to redeem us not only because you should have our best interests in mind, but also it's in, for your best interest. In other words, this is the idea in Kabbalah called Shechinta B'Galuta, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes into Galus when we go into Galus, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu accompanies us, that there is the Gemara Megill and other places speaks about almost like that HaKadosh Baruch Hu causes a bifurcation or a lack of shlemus in the wholeness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu when the Jewish people are in Galus. L'shem yichud kucha b'richa u'shchinte. We speak that we do mitzvahs, we create a unity within HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we say this l'shem yichud before we do mitzvahs, because by doing mitzvahs we will redeem ourselves, and in the process we will also redeem HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Haskinu sudasa in the Zemiris of Shabbos speaks about that. We speak about Mincha, which is supposed of Shabbos, which is supposed to be the time that focuses on the Messianic era of Shabbos. Ata achad v'shimcha achad. There'll come a time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when your name will be one, and therefore Am Yisrael will be one. And so, what when we speak about the fact that there is a separation between ourselves and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we almost say like HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sleeping, that he's not connected to us; he's sleeping. But the idea of Mizmor L'Asaf is that even when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sleeping, he's still connected with us. That there's still there is still redemption. That even in Galus, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu is connected to us even when he's sleeping. Even when there's, the better word for sleeping would be Hester Panim. Right? That there is still a connection. That is totally connected to the Kibbutz Ovaim story. Because our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is like a father and a son. Right? He is Avinu. He's Malkeinu, but he's also Avinu. And what's the story here? The story here is about a son who feels connected to his father even when his father is sleeping. And therefore he's zocha to understand the Mizmor L'Asaf, because this is also speaking about a father, obviously HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the son, Knesset Yisrael, and here being a father and a son being connected to each other. So I think, unlike Rashi and Tosfos, which obviously it's Rashi and Tosfos, but there's actually, I think if you drill a little deeper, you actually can find even a stronger connection between the Mizmar LaAsaf and the story of the kibud of the aim of the sleeping father and the son waiting, and the recognition of the fact that even when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sleeping, so to say, there's still a connection between us. We don't walk away.
Even in Rashi, that during a time of Hesker Panim, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving us Yisur, and he's not giving us Yisur in a way that destroys us.
Yeah, right. 100%. Very nice. So I'd like to spend a little time on two contemporary shilas in Kibud of the Aim. One is more like a Kirov shila, and one's more a medical ethics shila with Kibud of the Aim issues. And that is, we have a responsibility to Kibud of the Aim, but we also have the mitzvah of the Eshap Sosai Tishmaru. You can't violate halacha in order to engage with your responsibility to Kibud of the Aim. So what about inviting non-from parents to your house on Shabbos? You guys ever discuss that at all? The issue of that, you know? There's Kibud of Ein. There's also the mitzvah of Ahavta Es Hashem Elkecha, which, according to the Rambam, represents the idea of teaching other people about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's also the issue of Es Shabsotai Tishmaru, not just literally, but you can't be over Lifnei Iver. You can't cause somebody else who's driving, maybe anyways, instead of coming to your house for Shabbos for the meal, might drive to the mall or to a movie, but it's still, is there an issue of lifnei iver lo titein mechshol? If in the process of trying to honor your parents by inviting them to your house for Shabbos and engaging with them, are you being over in that case an isser of lifnei iver lo titein mechshol? What's your feelings about this? Anyone think about this ever? What's your feelings?
Let me ask the question.
Yeah, you can ask a question by any guest, but since my topic was Kibud of the Aim, I was going to focus on Kibud of the Aim.
It might be a difference also that you might not necessarily be trying to encourage your own parents as much as you'd be trying to encourage other guests.
Okay. That could be. Sometimes I think it finds it easier because parents want to more than connect with their children, with their grandchildren. So they might be interested in a more experiential, more religious experience when they have children, and most of the time after that are grandchildren who are Shomer Shabbos. Any suggestions? How do you deal with that issue?
Generally what I've heard is you should let them know that they have a place to stay and that they don't have to drive, and if they choose to drive, then that's their choice.
Okay, how does that obviate the issue? You're right. Because you're giving them a choice. But even though you know they're going to drive anyways, does that still deal with the Lifnei Iver issue?
It's not true, but it are.
Right. Well, let's go through the sugya just for 2-3 minutes, and then we'll go to... and that is, Rav Sternbach in the Tshuvas van Hagos, in the first volume, has a whole conversation, Shin and Ches, has a whole thing on this, and he actually has a chiddush, which only he says. And the question is asked about parents, inviting parents, and you'll be machshir them because of Lifnei Iver. And he has this unbelievable chiddush that it's not Lifnei Iver, because Lifnei Iver requires, I'll just read near it, She Yisoda Isid Lifnei Iver, Hu Dumya De Iver Shemachshilo, that your mamish, your intention is to fool them. Aval im kavanaso raku tovas atzmo, lo nikra machshil. That if it's in order to benefit the parents, that's what the case that Rav Sternberg is speaking about, it's not considered a machshel. It's no different than a rofe who is not maka b'chaveiro, but is you know, doing something that will extract blood, but he's doing it for a healthy thing. That's not considered lifnei iver. This is not an etzah she'ena hogenes, and therefore there's no problem with it whatsoever. He dismisses lifnei iver because he basically says that the means are justified by the ends. Which is a wild chiddush, and he's the only one who says it. But it's Rav Sternbach, so it needs to be mentioned. But another way of dealing with it is the way you guys said, and that is that, you know, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah that speaks about Lifnei Iver has very strict paradigms of Lifnei Iver. And that is, it's not just, Lifnei Iver means that he could not, or she could not have violated the prohibition without you. So in other words, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Davav, speaks about the idea of Shalo Yoshid Adam Kos Shoyayan Lenazer or Ever Menachai Livnei Noach, and it speaks about the case, as you said, about Trey Avrei Denara. In other words, the Nazir is on one side, the wine is on the other side of the river, and you're bringing it over. But if the Nazir has, you know, six liquor stores next door to him, and you bring him wine to drink, you might not be the nicest guy in the world, but you're not over Lifnei Iver. Lifnei Iver means that you are the only conduit through which the person can be over the Avera. So if you offer the person housing at your house and say, listen, you're welcome to stay here, you know, mommy, daddy, whatever, Abba, Ima, whatever it is, you know, you're welcome to stay for all Shabbos, we have a room for you, we want you to stay all Shabbos, and they say, no, we're just going to come for Shabbos morning or Friday night. By the fact that you have created a situation in which they don't need to violate the thing, but rather you've created the opportunity for them to be able to stay in the house all the time, even if they do not take you up on your offer, you haven't done anything wrong. Rav Moshe Feinstein, for example, gives an example of a catering hall. If a caterer has a hall and he doesn't demand that the members, that the person who rents his catering hall does mixed dancing, and if someone does mixed dancing, he's not over Lifnei Iver. Because it's not on the rules. They didn't sign a contract that I must do mixed dancing, and they can rent another catering hall like that. As long as you're not creating the... as long as you are creating another avenue through which they can be fully Shomer Shabbos, for that Shabbos, unlike Rav Sternberg, who says it's no Lifnei Iver whatsoever, most approaches are that it's not Lifnei Iver based on the Gemara and Avodah Zarah, and many supporting things that are found in other halachas, that there's no issue of Lifnei Iver. For example, on Shvius, during Shemitah, you're not allowed to sell a plow or a tractor to somebody you know is not keeping Shemitah, because that's Lifnei Iver. But are you allowed to sell, the Mishnah says, you are allowed to sell, in Perek Hey, Mishnah Vav, you're allowed to sell a Magol Yad, you know, like a small hand sickle that you could do work for, with your plants inside your house. The guy might take it outside and use it outside, but that's not, you've created a conduit through which that tool could be used in a mutter way. Once you've created a conduit through which that tool can be used in a mutter way, there's no issue of Lifnei Iver. And that's exactly what Rav Moshe says, that's what all the Rishonim say. And in a letter that Rav Shlomo Zalman actually wrote many years ago to a whole bunch of us who were involved in Kiruv through a person from Or Sameach, he actually went through this. First of all, reminding us that anyone who's Mechal Shabbos is a din of Tinuk Shenishba. Anyone, and that's based on Malamed Lahoel, which is interesting, because that Malamed Lahoel that speaks about people Tinuk Shenishba, depending on new publications of Malamed Lahoel, it's an Orach Chaim Siman Chaf Tes. If you look at new publications of Malamed Lahoel, some people, modern printers, weren't so happy with that Malamed Lahoel that basically said that someone in America is considered a Tinuk Shenishba and it's been removed from printings of the Malamed Lahoel. It's a tragedy that all of a sudden a printer can become a posek, but it's happened in certain ones. So Rav Shlomo Zalman writes, Mutar lahazmin gam mi shegar rachok mimakom hatfila ulahatzia lo makom lalin karov lamakom baofen shelo yitzarek kal lachal Shabbos. In other words, as long as you give the person a place, makom lin, place to sleep, then that's okay. Va'afim lo yikabel es hatzah, even if they don't accept it, ein chayavim lagid lo shim namishum kach lavo. You don't have to stop your, you know, fighting your parents, stuff like that. You don't even have to warn them that it's forbidden to drive by car. The fact that you've done that, you've obviated the issue of Lifnei Iver. So that's one very interesting halacha. So that's one that I wanted to do. And I wanted to do another one that is, I think, very interesting and needs a little bit of an introduction. And that is the following. Gemara tells us that there's a mitzvah of kibbut of the aim during the life of the father, the Gemara Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Beis, right? Tells us there's a mitzvah of kibud of the aim during life, and also kibud of the aim ba'achar misa, right? You have that Gemara? It's the second middle of the second white line. Tarmon Rabbanan Mechavda B'chayev Mechavda B'moso. B'chayev Ketzad gives you an example, and then it says B'moso. If you hear something from his mouth, Shmuel Mepiv Lo Yomark Chacham Abba, or you should say Abba Mori. And if it's in the first year or the first 11 months, Hareni Kapara Mishkavo. Right, that if he's done anything wrong, I should create a kapara for him. Or after that, he should say Zichrona Lebracha, right? And so there is this responsibility to treat a parent and your chayav and kibud avim even after Misa. The Meiri on this daf actually concretizes this lahalacha. The Rambam in Hilchos Mamrim, Perek Vav, Halacha Hey, also speaks about it. And Yeridea, Reish Mem, mentions it also. They actually in Maseches Smachos, the Perek Tes actually speaks about the idea of honoring B'misa is even more important than during life, because it's basically, you know, it's L'shem Shemayim. There's Machlokes in the Rishonim whether it's Daraisa Darabanan. Have you guys dealt with that study at all? It's Daraisa, but the Chinuch seems, the Mitzvah Lamed Gimel seems to say it's Daraisa. And then there are other things that have to do with respecting parents even after death. For example, the Rambam in Hilchos Malva Velova, Perek Daled Halacha Daled, has the following thing: Heniach lehem avia ma'ushal ribis. Your parents leave you a yerusha. Your father leaves you a yerusha, but he lent money with ribis, and he got ribis back. Afal pi she'ein yodim sheheim shal ribis. Afal pi she'ein yodim sheheim shal ribis eino chayavim lechagzir. Even though you know that your father borrowed, lent money and got paid with ribis, you don't have to return it. What about the following? Hiniach lehem para utalish shel ribis, b'chol davar hamasuyim chayivim lahagzim and they covered avihem. But if your father got, let's say, a cow or a talis or a piece of clothing as ribis, and there it's mamish something that's mafursam, it's known, it's, you know, people walk by and say, oh, this person of blessed memory, or they won't say maybe a blessed memory, you know, I paid back my loan, but I had to give him ribis, and I gave him my cow. So it says, chayavim lahagzir mifnei kavod avihem. Even though it might be not considered mishal av at that point, it may be considered the kid's money, but you should return it because of kavod your father. B'med devar mirim kisha asa tshuva, v'lo hifzak lahagzir at shemes. Avam lo asa tshuva ein choshim lechvodo. That's an issue of dealing with the person kibud of the aim of a rasha or not. But the bottom line is the Rambam in Hilchos Malva Lova, in addition to the Gemara's examples of treating your father and acknowledging his words, gives you an example of returning money. The whole idea of a yartzeit, a yom shemes bo aviv or imo, the Rishonim write. There's some Rishonim that say it's a minhag to fast on those days, and there's a whole conversation about what the minhag is, but according to many of them, it's a din and kibud of the aim. The whole idea of kaddish, according to some, it's a din and kibud of the aim. If the father has a tzava, it's a minhag of kibud of the aim to honor that. If you honor your father's minhagim after your father's no longer alive, it's a minhag of kibud of the aim. Okay? There's also an issue of kibud of aim post your father passing away, and that is also the responsibility of S to honor your older brother. We'll just keep this in the room here. But the bottom line is, and even after your father's no longer, or parents are no longer alive, that still applies. So the bottom line is, I'm trying to acknowledge the fact that there's a whole bunch of examples of the mitzvah of kibud of aim posthumously. So I want to ask the following very interesting question that is a very recent shaila, past 20 plus years. What happens if a person is conceived after his father dies? His father leaves over sperm, it's frozen, and the father's wife says, I want to memorialize my father, my husband, I want to have another child, and all of a sudden a child is born from that sperm. So the son is not alive even at the point, the son is not alive, the father is not even alive at the point of conception. In other words, it's not that the father, the mother and the father had relations and the father died before the child was born. That we know from the story of Esther, that it's benol chol davar ke'en la'av ve'em, and it's repeated twice, and the Gemara and Megillah says why it's repeated twice, to show you that the father died even before the child was born, and it's benohu l'chol davar, and stuff like that. But what about a case in which the child wasn't even conceived when the father was alive? The child is conceived after the father is dead. Is there a mitzvah of kibud of the aim in that type of case? You understand the question? And obviously it's not a mitzvah kibud aim b'chayim, but it's a kibud of the aim b'meis. So let's give some examples. Let's say the father has four other children, and now this child is born. Does the Yerusha have to get resplit to include this fifth child? Now the father's a Kohen. Is the child, when the child quotes, does he have to say Avimori? Does he have to celebrate or commemorate the Yortzeit? With Kaddish, does he say Kaddish? Those are all mitzvahs of Kibud Av Ve'Em. So does he have any of those responsibilities? If he finds out that there was a Ribbis situation, does he have to return it? All the examples that we just gave you, but here we're talking about a case in which the father was not alive at the point in time that the child was even conceived. What's the halacha? What do you guys think?
Two separate questions.
Okay.
First, you have to deal with, in general, are you the father?
Yeah. So we passing that we do that that sperm donation does it. That's there's very few people who don't. Yes, that's the first thing. But whether it's in the Chassidus Chag, whether it's Rav Shlomo Zalman, whether it's Rav Moshe Feinstein, that's why Rav Moshe Feinstein always demanded that sperm donations not happen by Jews, but use a non-Jewish sperm donor because Shema Yisa Basa Choso issues. It's because of the fact that you're Miyaches to the father. So you understand the Shaila? Now this is not like Star Trek science Shailas. This is Mamish Shailas everyday Shailas. So I want to just walk you through these shilas basically. So the first thing is in Evan Ezer Simon Aleph, there is a Beis Shmuel that speaks about it's based on the Gemara and Chagiga and other Gemaras regarding the idea of if a woman becomes pregnant by sitting in a bathhouse. Again, I'm not talking about the science here. I'm talking about just the Messias. And the idea is a woman becomes pregnant without there being any type of physical contact. What's the halacha regarding that child? So the Beis Shmuel, or Shmuel Fivish, writes that Nishma Dehave Beno V'chol Tavar is his son for every single thing, which is the reason, based on this Beis Shmuel, and there's a plethora of other of Achronim and others that say this. The Minchas Yitzchak, who was the Dai in the Eidah Haredes, when he discusses also the idea of what you mentioned, the idea of an IUI, or just donation of sperm, he says, based on the Rav Shmuel Fivus, Rav Yaakov Emden, and he quotes around 20 others, it's Chelik Aleph Simen Nun, he writes that Pshitali, the Kaima Mitzvah, and Beno Hu L'chol Davar. The father is Yotze Pru Ravu, and it's his son, L'chol Ateis. But now we're talking about actually a different Shaila. That's well and great when the father is still alive, where the donor is still alive. I'm talking about a case where the donor is not even alive at the moment of, the moment of conception. So there's an unbelievable No Debi Yehuda in Madura Kama Evan Ezer Simon Samach Tes, where the No Debi Yehuda asks the following question. And that is, when a husband passes away and the wife has no children, what's the protocol? What do you have to go through? Yibam. Or chalitza. Right. We only do chalitza now. But you do yibam or chalitza. Parenthetically, there was actually a time in which the Sfardim weren't felt that maybe even in our time you should do Yibum, and Rav Avadya in his early ages actually tried to advocate that Sfardim should also do, was involved with this whole idea whether Sfardim should do Yibum or not. There's a whole Maisa about that, but that's the tangent that we're not going to get into. So the Noda Behuda asks the following questions. We wait a certain amount of time before we do Yibum, or before we do Yibum or Chalitza. How long do we wait?
3 months.
3 months. Why? Because we say by that time, if a woman is pregnant, we'll know. And the bottom line is, if she's pregnant, then there's no need for Yibum or Chalitza, or it's usher to do Yibum, to be more precise. So Noda Behuda says, why do you wait 90 days? You should wait 93 days. After all, the Gemara says it takes 3 days for the Zera to be collate. So you should add 3 plus 90. It should be 93 days. So most who discuss the Shaiwa basically say it's a rounding issue of the 90 days, right? Not the Noda Behuda. The Noda Behuda says the following, and I quote. He asks, V'hayilo l'hamtin tzadi gimel yom. V'kusha zu chamura ma'od. Why yom? V'amarti b'libi emes, shahatorak siv umeis echad mehem ubein ein lo. That if the husband dies and there's no child, mikam makom, im hiniach ishto muberis makri yesh lo. If the woman is pregnant at the time that the husband dies, that means that she has a child. So therefore you have to wait 3 months to see if the woman was pregnant at the time that he dies. Here's the unbelievable thing. Shadayin lo nolad. Im nolad acharkach makri l'marfreya yesh lo ben. Okay, you got that? Aval. Im b'shas moso. If at the time of the husband's death, lo haita afilu muberet, she was not pregnant, b'vadai. Im haya ba'otosha etzo navi v'omar she'inu muberet, haita muteret ba'otosha liyabim. And if a Navi told us for sure that she wasn't pregnant, we wouldn't have to wait the 3 months. We're only waiting the 3 months for the reason we just said. Ani Omer Isha Shalo Kolta Hazera Kodem Misa Sabahla, a woman who may have had relations with her husband before he died, and therefore it should take 3 days before she is pregnant. If at the moment in which he dies, she's not pregnant, even though she may become pregnant 3 days later, shalo kolta hazera kolta misa zabala, if she's not pregnant at that time, afsha kolta achamoso, even though she becomes pregnant after his death, ubenohu l'chol davar, and it is his child for all halachas, nivmakol makom le'inyan yibum, for the issue of yibum, kvar karinim bei, the pasuk says, at the point of death, ubein ein lo b'shas misa, ubas yibum hi, and therefore she's a bas yibum. So says the Noda Behuda, you actually can have a case in which a child is born to a deceased parent, deceased father. The mother still requires yibum or chalitza because at the moment there was no pregnancy. But nevertheless, she's still chay of Yibum. In other words, you can separate the din of Yibum and having a child. And the key, crucial component, Nakuda, that I want to highlight is not the issue of whether she's a bas Yibum or not, you know, but his language, ubenohu l'chol davar. That this child, this is his child for all the halachas, for kibud av aim, for all the issues, benohu l'chol davar, for Yerusha, for everything else. In this case, there's only one Yoresh, or else you wouldn't have the Yibum Chalitza issues. So this is a Moradik Noda Behuda, which some people, you know, try to suggest that this is a proof that there's such a thing as what we would call posthumous paternity. That there can be kibud av the aim l'achar misa, in a case where there was no opportunity to even do kibud av'aim b'chayim, that you can actually have a kibud av'aim la'achar misa without a kibud av'aim, you know, b'chayim, which is an unbelievable thing. Now the Keren Ha'ora in Yevamos, and the Perek Tes, like goes ballistic on this note of Yehuda, and he says the following. He says, you know, this doesn't work, this doesn't make sense, because Aval inyan yibum koshi yesh sofa v'yot lo zera, because the issue of yibum should be that once you're going to have a child, oshahayu lo v'acharkach meis lav v'yibum hu. It doesn't make a difference whether the child, whether it was koate night, you know, before he died or not after he died. Karen Ora doesn't accept this idea where you could have a posthumous child. He accepts it. He agrees with it. He just says it's not a bas yibum. So from our perspective, it just buttresses our point. Whether she's a bas yibum or not, that's an argument between the Rebbe Yehuda. So, however, the question is this Rebbe Yehuda a good proof text to a case that I just articulated, and that is where the husband dies, there is, as I said, sperm in a in a freezer somewhere. They unthaw the sperm, they put it in the woman, she has a child, names it after her husband who passed away, who never knew her, his own son. Can you learn from the Note of Yehuda that that's also still has din kibbutz? And what do you think? Are there any differences between the Note of Yehuda's case and the more modern case that I just gave you?
They didn't actually have relations in the more modern case.
More than that, say it more precise, because you don't have to have relations.
He wasn't. What do you mean?
There is a difference. You're getting to the difference, but you're just saying it on a. There's a larger difference that's based on what you just said.
He wasn't actively involved in creating the child.
That's nice. I didn't think about that, but I think it's more than that. There's no more Maisei Adam that's required in the case of the Note of Yehuda. The Note of Yehuda case, Benohu L'chol Davar, everything is now within a natural progress, right? There's nothing less, there's no more human initiative required. So maybe in that case it's Benohu L'chol Davar, but in our case, what do you have to do? You have to take the sperm out of the freezer, and again, I'm not saying this in a scientific way, you have to thaw out the sperm. Then you have to put the sperm into the woman, right? You know, you have to do a process. So there's a whole bunch of Maisa Adam that's still required. Who says that you can use the Note of Yehuda as your proof text to this? And actually, in Eretz Yisrael, there's been a major machlokas amongst the various Batei Din whether the Note of Yehuda's thing is a proof text to this or not. So Rav Shaul Yisraeli, who is one of the major poskim a little bit more than a generation ago, or last generation. Rav Shaul Yisraeli, who was part of the Beis Din Tzedek, he said, no, you cannot compare the two, because, one, there's still Maisa Adam involved, and in the case of Note Yehuda, the whole natural process has already begun. There's no more human initiative. But other Rabbanim felt that doesn't make a difference. This Note Yehuda is a proof text that the same way it's beno hu l'chol davar when the father is alive, it's beno hu l'chol davar even after the father passes away. So here you have an example of the halachas of kibud of aim, the need to commemorate a yortzei, the need to deal with any yerusha issues, the need to follow certain menhagim, and everything else like that, based on a parent, and I use that letter in quotes, or based on someone who's giving a certain genetic donation to the child, even though that parent was not alive even at the point of conception. If you hold that there's obviously a din of kibud of em achar misa, so perhaps there is this in our modern day of age, you can have a kibud of em achar misa also. An interesting contemporary thing. Okay?
Thank you so much.
All right, we'll stop here. Any questions on this?